Welcome back to the Red Seat Podcast. This is your host, Jake Devereaux, and today I am joined by Matt Corey of BP Boston. Matt, how are you, buddy?
I'm hanging in there, Jake. Hanging in there. How are you?
I am good. I'm better than you because I'm not a Caps fan. Not that I'm better than you, but I'm doing better than you are. Because I am not a Caps fan.
You are better than me, and you are feeling better than me. You are both of those.
You are too kind, sir. To offset your sadness about the Caps, we have some really good stuff to talk about today. The first thing I want to lead with is we had day baseball today. So as we record this at 5:40 p.m. on the East Coast time, we have a win in the books for the Sox. They close out their road trip 3-3 versus the Twins and the Milwaukee Brewers. And today's game was pretty awesome. We got a gem of a start from Eduardo Rodriguez, who seems like he has officially broken out. I don't know if we can say that quite yet, but I'll get your take on that in a second. And then we also have Craig Kimbrel continuing to be just about as good as Craig Kimbrel has ever been in his career this year. And John Farrell is using him in incredibly interesting and previously unthought of ways, especially by us. So we have lots of things to unpack, and we also got a game-winning Mookie Betts home run, which we just like mentioned third because obviously we expect that crap by now. But let's lead with Eduardo here. You've seen him a bunch this season. Do you think that he has actually turned the corner and broken out, and Eduardo that we're seeing now is the Eduardo that we should expect to see going forward?
It's hard to say with young pitchers. I am very optimistic about Eduardo being, you know, a number two or number three in this rotation. But that said, you know, he's never thrown a ton of innings in any, you know, given season before. I think the most he's ever thrown, last year he threw 107 innings for the Red Sox and 38 in AAA. So whatever that comes out to be, 145 innings. And that's the most he's ever thrown. So it's a great start to the year. You know, his strikeouts are up. His walks are up a real little bit, but I wouldn't be concerned about it. I mean, mostly I just think he's doing a fantastic job of commanding his pitches. You know, that changeup looks devastating today. He was just getting swings and misses with it over and over and over from the Brewers. And he's an exciting, you know, intriguing guy. And, you know, when you look at the Red Sox rotation, there's not a lot of guys that you would expect to take a step forward, you know. Although I guess Chris Sale's sort of done that, and we can talk about it later, but you know, we kind of know who Pomerantz is. You know, at this point, if David Price is even going to pitch, you know, probably the up, you know, the best case scenario is last year's version of David Price, who was maybe a little unlucky, but also not ace level David Price. Anyway, but I think Rodriguez is definitely an intriguing, you know, guy and you know, a source of, I'll put it this way. I wouldn't be shocked if he started game two of, you know, the division series.
Yeah. I don't know if I would be totally shocked by that either. I think we all knew that he had this type of ability in him, and we saw it in flashes at different points over the last two seasons. But what we haven't really seen is consistency to this degree and his stuff be quite this devastating. I mean, right now, through 35.1 innings pitched, he has 42 strikeouts. And what has been really interesting about watching him is that, and from hearing other people talk about this as well, is his stuff is fairly similar to Chris Sale's stuff in terms of just like purely the velocity and the pitch mix that he throws. And I wonder how much of the influence of having Chris Sale on the team, you know, has impacted his growth as a player, because clearly he is doing something differently this year. I wonder if it's pace or anything like that. But I mean, he really does throw very similar stuff to Chris Sale. I mean, you know, we wouldn't say that his stuff is quite as devastating, but it's pretty effective.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, definitely effective. Remy, and I almost said Remy and Arcillo. Oh, sadness. Remy and Dave O'Brien were talking about this very topic on the broadcast today, and basically talking about how Sale was having a positive impact on Rodriguez, how Sale's – I mean, we've all watched Sale. You know, he works very quickly. And, you know, I think Rodriguez has – it seems like anecdotally anyway, picked it up a little bit. This season, Fangraphs has a stat called pace, and I don't know exactly how it's calculated, so I hesitate to use it, but I will throw it out there. Last year, Rodriguez's pace was 23.4. This year it's 25.3. So there is that, and I'm looking up Sales right now. Sales this year is 20.4. So I don't know if that's seconds in between pitches.
It must be, yeah.
I probably shouldn't quote a stat that I don't really know what it means. shut up, Matt. Anyway, I forget your question. Well done.
Just about the similarities of stuff, and I'm looking at it right now, the pitch mix from these two guys. You know, Chris Sale throws a little bit harder for his fastball by about a mile an hour on average.
He throws more strikes. He throws more strikes. And I think a huge difference between Chris Sale and just about every other pitcher in baseball is deception. I think that's an underrated aspect of pitching, and it's sort of — I got into a discussion about this on Twitter today. I think that's the reason that Joe Kelly, despite his great stuff, is not a very good pitcher. He has no deception whatsoever.
Mm-hmm. People see the ball very well out of his hand.
I mean, you see it well before it, you know, even leaves his hand. I mean, right. You can follow it the entire way, whereas with Chris Sale, you don't pick it up until after it's left his hand almost. And so that makes, you know, 96, 97, you know, 100, it seemed like 102 or 103 or something. I mean, anyway, so I think that's a tough comparison to make just because Sale has been so incredible. But I do think that Rodriguez has seemingly taken a step forward this year, you know, just in terms of his command. And I should also mention, you know, he's been healthy.
Right.
You know, his knee hasn't been bothering him. He's not had any little aches and pains that have kept him out of the you know, the rotation. And so, knock on wood, I think that's allowing him to, you know, to build off of his starts in a way that we haven't really seen from him at the major league level yet. You know, there was the injuries and the pitch tipping that he's gone through. Sorry, I've got a grandfather clock in here.
I thought you were broadcasting from church.
Now that would be awesome. I should do that next time. But yeah, it'll be done in a second. Anyway, so that's or maybe it won't be. So anyway, that's Rodriguez. I think Sale is a tough comparison, but I think that I think Rodriguez is a great three and a good, you know, a good two if he's pitching like this.
Certainly, and certainly it probably doesn't hurt him to have somebody like Sale to emulate and to learn from. And maybe, you know, a lot of what was talked about when the Red Sox acquired David Price in the offseason last year was the impact that David Price will have on all the other pitchers. And I think it's possible that we're seeing the Chris Sale impact on all the other pitchers this year. And one of those pitchers that might be being impacted by Sale or might just be impacted by the fact that he has run into some good health now that he might not have had in 2016 is Craig Kimbrel, who has been so startlingly good this year that his numbers are actually slightly better by a lot of metrics than they were in 2012, which was one of the greatest reliever seasons of all time. So while I'm not saying that Craig Kimbrell is going to keep that up for the rest of the year, right now he is actually the best version of Craig Kimbrell that we have ever seen. And watching him throw immaculate innings, you know, nine strike, three out innings, nine pitches, it's crazy. It's insane. This is so far from what I was expecting from Chris Sale that from Craig Kimbrell, sorry, that I don't know what to make of it. You know, it's unbelievable.
Yeah, it really is, actually. He's been incredible. I wish that I had thought to tweet this out, but ESPN Boston tweeted out a list of the results of the last, I want to say, 13 plate appearances. I don't know where it is. But anyway, that Sale has – the batters that Sale has faced, and they're all strikeouts except for one, which was an infield single that happened.
Is this Kimbrell you're talking about?
Kimbrell, yes, sorry.
Kimbrell, yeah.
Kimbrell. It's ridiculous. He's commanding his pitches. He can get the curveball over for a strike. He can throw the fastball, you know, up and down, in and out. I was really terrified after last season that, you know, the walks were just going to become all consuming with him.
Yeah, me too. He cost so many games with the walks last year. It seemed like key situations, he just could not be trusted.
No, he couldn't throw a strike a lot of the time. I mean, there was times when he would just flash like that, you know, like the guy the Red Sox were hoping to get when they got him. And you know, he would have two or three appearances in a row, and you're like, oh, maybe he's turned the corner, and he would strike out, like, I mean, you know, 7 out of 10 guys, like something ridiculous, and walk one or something. And this year, and then he would just revert right back to, you know, spiking the curveball, throwing it way out of the zone. And but this year he's getting both pitches over for strikes when he wants to, and it's a beautiful thing to watch. I have to say, I still think that they paid way too much to get him, I don't love the idea of making trades like that for relievers. I mean, we've seen the Red Sox success with you know, acquiring relievers for good prospects is not a good one. It's not a good track record. But yeah, he's, you know, certainly in the moment, he's fun to watch. And for a team that expects to, you know, be in the playoffs, I think there's a lot of value to having a guy like that. If you can only guarantee he can hold it together for a full season.
I mean, if we're going to go back to the trade value thing, if he does end up pitching like this for the entirety of this year, I think that totally changes the equation for me, because we didn't see anything close to this in 2016 from him. So if in 2017 we get the best version of him ever and he can do things like he did today, which I think is worth talking about, Farrell has now used him twice in the past six games in non-save situations, essentially as a fireman, where he would come in to face the toughest batters. Today he got five outs. If he's playing that type of a role, an Andrew Miller-esque role, pitching 1.2 innings against the toughest batters or the highest leverage situations, I mean, I think that goes a long way for making up for it, right?
Yeah, I mean, his value can play up depending on usage, I would say. You know, if Farrell is going to use him in situations like he did today. So just to set this up a little bit, so it was 1-1. The Red Sox had a bunch of runners on base over the course of the earlier innings of the game, but weren't able to get any hits. They left the bases loaded twice, and it was 1-1 in the eighth inning, and Matt Barnes came out of the bullpen, got the first out, and then the second batter was, I forget who it was, but Milwaukee pinch hit Eric Thames for him.
Yep. Thames. Thames is how it's pronounced, apparently.
Thames, I'm sorry. Eric Thames. Is that right? Thames?
That is what I hear.
Okay.
You can just call him the god from South Korea.
He's good. So anyway, Thames, Thames, whoever it is coming to bat. He's their best hitter. You know, we've all heard about what a menace he's been so far this year. And I was totally expecting Farrell to just stick with Barnes there. And it wouldn't have shocked me if we had a, you know, a replay of the Joe Mauer home run from earlier in the road swing that that lost that game in the ninth inning for the Red Sox. And instead, so, you know, what is this, a batter or two in? You know, Farrell comes out of the dugout and nabs nabs Barnes and brings in Kimbrel. It was an amazing sight to see. I was blown away. I think I was more surprised at that than I was at any other aspect of that, you know, that game. Anything else that happened in that game, I did not expect Farrell to do that, and it was genius. I mean, you know, we've talked about Farrell's you know aspects, good aspects of his you know, managerial resume, things he's good at, and I think most of them are not in-game management.
Yeah,
certainly. Most of them, yeah, you know, most of them are you know, probably clubhouse related. Maybe there's organizational stuff in there as well. But you know, he I think he has a lot of things to recommend him as a manager, but I don't think necessarily bullpen management is one of them. And today he you know, he shoved those words right down my throat. I thought he was brilliant, and he may have won the game for the Red Sox.
Yeah, you know, I completely agree. I think that this is a step in his evolution. You know, we talk about players developing and learning and getting better. I mean, it's possible that John Farrell, after seeing what Terry Francona did in last year's playoffs, has softened to the idea of doing that, and especially it makes it a whole lot easier to do that when you have a guy like Craig Kimbrel pitching as well as he is. And I think it's fair for us to say that, like, we probably are pretty critical about John Farrell, and we were certainly pretty critical of Craig Kimbrel coming into this season with good reason. But we need to give credit where credit is due. I mean, both of those guys performed perfectly today.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I don't have anything to add to that. That's exactly right.
Yeah. So coming into this season, the three players on the Red Sox that I was probably most down on were, and aside from David Price, because he was dealing with the injury stuff, were Craig Kimbrel, Hanley Ramirez, who I wasn't sure what we were going to get out of him with his shoulder issues, and then Drew Pomerantz. And to this point, I've been pleasantly surprised by all three of those guys to varying degrees. I'm wondering how you felt about those guys, and if there are any players on the Red Sox roster that you have changed your opinion on in this early go.
I'm optimistic about Ramirez. I was optimistic about him being able to hit. He's, you know, he's had some injuries in his career, but you know, when he's had some semblance of health, he's pretty much always hit. I think he's had a down year or two, but you know, for the most part, he's hit. And last year isn't wholly out of line with what he's done in his career. So I was optimistic he'd be able to turn in another season similar to last year's. I'm a little disappointed that he's sort of, I don't know if he's outright refusing to do it, but it seems like he's refusing to play first base, which is, you know, problematic from a roster standpoint.
Yeah.
But, you know, if he's going to hit, then, which he hasn't really done to date, but I'm expecting more from him. But if he's going to hit, then I ultimately, you know, you can put up with it in the same sort of way that, you know, the Red Sox never asked David Ortiz after, you know, the first, I don't know, whatever it was, 5 years that he was on the team to play first base other than occasionally, you know, in a National League ballpark.
Right.
But, you know, I completely echo your concerns over Pomerantz and Kimbrel. This is more or less what I was thinking Pomerantz would do, have some good games and some stinkers, but my concern with him is really more health related. I think he's going to be a perfectly fine 4 or 5, flashing 3, flashing 6, as long as he's healthy. But I don't completely trust him to be healthy, and I think that's the big problem with him. If the big problem with that trade is, you know, it totally makes sense if Pomerantz can be out on the hill every 5 days, but I think it's fair to question whether or not he's going to be able to do that all year. So, and as far as Kimbrel goes, you know, we just talked about that. So far I've been 100% wrong about him, and am so happy to be wrong about him too.
Yeah. I mean, all the signs pointed towards a career trajectory pointing downwards for Craig Kimbrel. Oh, yeah. So the fact that he has rebounded and become better than he has ever been to this point is shocking and something that we certainly couldn't have expected. I don't think anybody really expected this, but I agree with you. I think that of all three of those guys, the one still to be sort of concerned about is Pomerantz to this point. And the Baseball America updated top 100 prospect rankings came out today, and Anderson Espinosa is ranked 29th there. He's still 19 years old. So if you're going to get a fourth or a fifth starter for him, still doesn't seem quite worth it to me for that trade. So I still don't love that one. But, you know, Pomerantz's stuff has looked better than I thought it would. And honestly, I was so down on him that I thought he might not even pitch this year too much because of the injury that he had been dealing with as well. So I don't know. I mean, mostly positive things for this team lately. And I know it doesn't quite feel that way because it's not like the Red Sox have been really running away with, you know, the division or anything like that. They've been looking up at the Orioles and the Yankees pretty much all season long, but I haven't felt a sense of doom about this team at all, even as they haven't quite kind of gotten it all together. It feels like the best baseball is still yet to come for these guys, which is kind of cool and kind of an interesting way to feel right now at this point in the season.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, if you look at the other, I don't know what the Orioles are really doing. I mean, they're doing their typical sort of, it seems like smoke and mirrors kind of thing. Like, you know, some of their best hitters are not really hitting, and their pitching is, you know, kind of mediocre, and yet there they are up on the top. Like, okay. And the Yankees have, everybody on that team is really hitting. They're getting some ridiculous performances from, you know, Aaron Judge, who is basically doing a Mike Trout plus added power kind of thing. And Aaron Hicks, the Twins, ex-Twins prospect, is hitting like Mike Trout. They've got, Gary Sanchez has not even really played much. He's only, I think, been in 10 games. He's hit well, but, you know, you'd expect maybe more from him given what he did last year. They've been getting, you know, really the only guy on that whole team who hasn't hit is Greg Bird, who is their first baseman. And I think they've had Matt Holliday over there. And Matt Holliday is, you know, having a ridiculous start to his season, too. He's crushing the ball. So, I'm expecting, you know, a lot of this team to take a step back offensively. Pitcher injuries, should they show up for the Yankees, would be pretty devastating. They don't have much in the way, I don't think, of depth in their rotation. They haven't won the division yet. You noted that the Red Sox haven't played their best baseball yet. I completely agree with that. Guys like, I think there's probably more power in Bogarts. You know, Pedroia's been getting on base, but he hasn't hit for much power at all. We haven't seen really anything from Bradley. It's been a weird year for Mookie in the sense that, like, his numbers, I think, are really good. But it just doesn't feel like he's been hitting that well. To me anyway, I think that he, maybe it's unfair to put this on a guy who's hitting, well, he's actually hitting better than this, but, 300, 376, 496 coming into Thursday. But I feel like he's got more in the tank than that. You know, and Hanley has been kind of a league average bat. I think he's better than that. So anyway, on and on. I think the Red Sox can turn this up a little bit, and there's going to be some regression from other teams in their division, which is really probably what I should have said in the beginning instead of prattling on and on and on as I did.
So to get to your point about the Yankees, I completely agree that they are going to see a big regression back to the mean. I think that even a guy like Gary Sanchez, who we saw be really, really impressive for about a half a season last year, the league is still going to adjust to him too. And the thing that Yankees fans don't understand is that, like, not all of these guys are going to come up and be Derek Jeter, but I think that most Yankees fans are 100% convinced that Gary Sanchez, Aaron Judge, and some of the other young kids that are coming up for these guys, Aaron Hicks, I don't know if they put him in that category, but I mean, they think that all these guys are going to pan out and be the next great set of Yankees, and that just might not be true. But I have to say, it is kind of an embarrassment of riches that they have. I mean, I mentioned the Baseball America rankings that just came out. They had Gleyber Torres as the second-ranked prospect in all of baseball. They have Clint Frazier at 33, another outfielder for them. Blake Rutherford at 37, another outfielder. They have Justice Sheffield, a pitcher, at 85. And then they've got two pitchers to round it out, Jordan Montgomery and Chance Adams at 99 and 100. So while I don't think that those arms that I mentioned are likely to be impact arms, I mean, there's still a lot of impact talent that could be coming up for those guys. But bottom line is the league is going to adjust back and adjust back really freaking hard to the Yankees. And I can't wait for that to happen. It's going to be awesome.
I think the one thing that you know, the start to the season has sort of told us is that the Red Sox, I thought there was a chance that the Red Sox were going to run away with the East. And I think that's clearly not going to happen at this point. You know, whether the Yankees and Orioles are unsustainable or not, it seems like, you know, they've both put themselves in positions where, you know, where they can be competitive this year at minimum and outright win the division, you know, in a best case scenario for those teams. So I think that it's going to be a fun season, you know, battling with those teams in the AL East, whereas I think, you know, before I kind of expected it not to be, you know, it more to be like, you know, waiting around for the playoffs. And, you know, in a certain, you know, as fun as that can be, there's nothing wrong with a little domination here and there.
Yeah, 2007 style, that was nice.
Yeah, those are fun memories for sure. But you know, battling down the stretch and you know, crossing the wire just ahead of one of them is or both of them. You know, would be a lot of fun too. So, I'm optimistic that the Red Sox still have the best team in the division, but it should be a more fun race now, I guess.
It'll be really telling to see what Brian Cashman does at the deadline here, because he'll really give himself away at the deadline. If they feel like this is a team that can contend and, you know, possibly be in it this year, he will buy. But I would bet, I mean, if I had to put a number on it, I would say there's an 85% chance that the Yankees don't add anything at the deadline. And I think it's just as likely that they actually sell off some of the older players who are having good years. I mean, they've got guys like Chase Headley, whose deal is coming to an end pretty soon, performing awesome. And Brett Gardner's having a really good season. I would not be surprised. And I think that they're still thinking a couple of years down the road. So I don't feel like they're quite to the point where they even believe they can contend. I can't see them going out and spending exorbitantly for like another arm or anything like that. Getting back to the Sox on this point, though, there are still two spots on the Sox that I think there's a fair amount of concern. One of them is center field, the situation that's been going on with Jackie Bradley. He's just been slumping like crazy. And then the other situation is third base. So I guess let's start with third base, because we just finished the series in Milwaukee, and we ran into old friend Travis Shaw there. Travis Shaw is playing awesome baseball right now. How did you feel watching Travis Shaw perform both competently with the glove and with the bat at third base this week?
Well, you know, given where the Red Sox are, you certainly, you know, miss having a guy like Travis Shaw. This is a point that I made at BP Boston last Friday. You know, the Dombrowski really destroyed the depth at third base to acquire some relievers. You know, and it's unfortunate that Tyler, I can't even think of his name, the guy they got for Shaw.
Thornburg.
Thornburg, jeez. Well, he hasn't thrown a pitch for the Red Sox yet. So
right, it's easy to forget at this point. Him and Carson Smith can go hang out and get an apartment together or something.
Yeah.
Go rehab.
So it's tough to look at what the Red Sox have at third base now. I mean, they have a lot of guys, but really nobody who can do everything that needs to be done there. And this isn't to say that Travis Shaw was, you know, the end all and be all. But, you know, even if he wasn't hitting, and he was not hitting last year, you know, as the season came to a close, you know, his second half was pretty bad. But he could actually play the position defensively. And, you know, the overall contribution that he made wasn't bad. He didn't hurt the team. He wasn't a net positive last year, but he didn't hurt the team either. I don't know if, you know, he's 27 and he's playing in the National League, so maybe the pitchers don't know him as well. It's entire, you know, maybe he's taking advantage of his new ballpark in a way that, you know, maybe it plays to his swing better than Fenway did. I don't know. But he's hitting really well. He's got a 118 OPS plus. He's got what is it, 7 homers
and 26 big RBIs that the Red Sox could certainly use at this point. And it's not to say that they would be that he would have those numbers with them, but I think the thing that stuck out to me most was he only has 4 errors at third base this year. We would kill for 4 errors at third base right now.
Yeah, and funny thing is that's a lot. You know, 4 errors in 31 games, that's a lot. But yeah.
I think the Red Sox have like 13 at the position
yeah,
right now.
Yeah, ridiculous number of errors. I mean, Sandoval had you know, a bunch of errors and then went on the DL, and it's just been an embarrassment since then, really. They just, the problem is they just don't have anybody between Sandoval and Rafael Devers, who just came up to AA.
Yep.
To start the year. And there's nobody in the pipeline who you could put at third base for the Red Sox and expect anything like league average production, either defensively or offensively. Well, let me back up. Maybe it's possible that if Brock Holt was healthy, that he or Josh Rutledge could play the position defensively on an average level. That's
yeah,
possible.
Those guys are okay. They all have their limitations. Like Brock Holt's arm is certainly a limitation at third base. But you're right. They're not guys who would come up and be completely egregious at the position. But I think you speak to a larger point, though, is the thing about giving up this type of depth and this type of control for a guy who can swing between first and third and hit for a little bit of pop and play both positions to a decent level defensively is that when injury strikes at all, you're in a situation like this where Devin Marrero is on the roster. And Devin Marrero comes up and he plays his first game during the Chris Sale start, and I'm all jazzed up. I'm tweeting on Twitter like, oh, this is great. We can finally get some defense, and especially with Chris Young in the game, which we'll talk about in a minute, you know, left field and center field aren't going to be an issue offensively. So, yeah, what the hell? You know, let's play Marrero, and then Marrero makes a friggin' error, too, in his first game up. So it just goes to show that a good shortstop or a good second baseman isn't necessarily going to be a good third baseman there. But, yeah, I mean, it just kind of sucks not having that and then not having the other side of it, too, with Tyler Thornburg being out. So – We won't harp on that too much, but I do want to talk about the center field situation, because obviously Jackie Bradley Jr. is amazing with his glove, but we
well,
have
Jake,
seen.
before we go
Sure.
on, can we talk a little bit about like what third base is going to be, towards the? I'm actually curious to hear your opinion on what is the answer here at third base? I mean, can we keep middling along with what they have? Did they need to get somebody from outside the organization? Do you think that Devers is ready to step up? That's been a big conversation on Red Sox Twitter, on message boards, and that sort of thing.
Yeah. My take on it is this. I don't think that Devers is going to be ready to step up. I think he could get a cup of coffee late in the year. But I think that they want to be careful with his development, because with Devers, what we've seen from him over his minor league career is halves where he does really well and halves where he does really poorly. We haven't really seen a full season of Rafael Devers where he has crushed it from the start to the finish. And I think they want to see that here. He's obviously looked really, really good with the bat early on. We're not going to mistake this guy for Manny Machado with the glove at third base. So while he might come up and fill in admirably with the glove, I think he's closer defensively to a guy like Travis Shaw than he is to a Manny Machado. And that's not to say he's Travis Shaw with the glove. He's certainly better than that. But I don't think that they want to rush his development. I would not hesitate if I was the Red Sox, if this team is in a good position towards the All-Star break, to make a very minor trade for some third base depth. And I'm talking like a glove first guy who really can't hit all that well, but maybe is, a decent side of a platoon to play with someone there, a guy who could fill in and, start some games if you need him to. But I can't see the club addressing this need as, going out and trading for an impact talent guy, because I think that Devers has the inside track to the job in 2018 for sure.
I think that's mostly right. I wouldn't be shocked if Devers didn't start the year because of service time, in 2018.
Sure. Yeah. I wouldn't be shocked by that either.
But yeah, I think, he's definitely the future at the position. With the caveat that the Red Sox general manager, team president, is Dave Dombrowski, and Dave Dombrowski loves big names and doesn't think a whole lot of prospects. And we have seen that, play out in an extreme fashion since Dombrowski took over the team. The name that obviously pops up, although he's on the DL now, is Josh Donaldson. I mean, with the Blue Jays struggling, I think Donaldson has a year and a half to go before he's a free agent. That kind of thing. I would be shocked, absolutely shocked, if Donaldson ended up on the Red Sox. But I would not be shocked, or I would be less shocked, I'll put it this way, if Dombrowski decided that, the Red Sox needed some star third baseman who I can't think of right now and ended up trading Devers for him. I would be very disappointed, but I wouldn't be shocked.
If there are two bigger name guys that I think could be a very, very faint possibility of coming to the Red Sox, I think two guys are Adrian Beltre, who has already played here, doesn't have much time left on his deal, and with Joey Gallo playing pretty well for the Rangers this year, I could see that as a potential possibility. And the other name there is Todd Frazier with the White Sox, who hasn't really been playing all that well this year. Those are two guys I think they could trade for. I don't really believe the Mike Moustakas talk there, because I don't think he's quite good enough. But if they could get one of these guys for a package of B-level prospects, certainly not including the Rafael Devers of the world.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have a problem with that, and especially a guy like Beltre. I mean, if you can get a half season of Beltre going into the playoffs, you're adding a potent bat and a great glove for down the stretch, and a veteran presence that you know what you're getting there. I mean, he played awesome for the Sox when he was here. Granted, that was a few years ago, but he's still a great player.
No, Beltre is a really interesting name to throw on the pile there. I'm expecting that if Sandoval can't stay healthy and or can't field the position. Two things which he's pretty much failed at so far this year, despite his, you know, his improved conditioning. Then I'm expecting Dombrowski to go out and find somebody else who can play. And I don't know whether that means Sandoval gets put on the bench, you know, a phantom long-term DL stint, or whether they, you know, just cut him straight up. I mean, if he can't play the position and he can't hit, he's not doing anybody any good.
Yeah.
By taking up a roster spot. So maybe, you know, maybe that happens. I think best case scenario for the Red Sox is he comes back and he hits, I kind of think he was doing beforehand. I think he was just running into some bad battered ball luck. He was hitting the ball pretty hard and not getting a lot to show for it.
But I agree. I felt the same way. I thought he looked pretty solid when he was up there making contact.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, he's certainly a flawed player at this point. You know, he doesn't hit from the right side really at all. And he's got very little range, even with the improved conditioning. But if he can hit from the left side, then maybe it's okay. Maybe you platoon him with somebody and then, you know, fix it next off season. But yeah.
I think you're right. I don't think you can see them addressing this in any big way with Devers on his way up. I want to throw two more names out there too. The Athletics have a fairly deep third base situation, not a very good one, but fairly deep.
Red Sox have a deep third base situation too, and also not a good one.
Well, these names are gonna make you a lot more excited than Sandoval. They've got Plouffe, they've got Healy, and they have Chapman, who is a prospect over there. All those guys can play and hit a little bit. So I mean, I can't imagine those guys being very expensive. Maybe a couple of your relief arms, maybe a package of like Aneri Tavares and Jalen Beeks or something like that to go get one of those guys. And while you might miss Beeks as a lefty reliever in the future, I don't know if that would stop Dombrowski from, you know, filling a need if the possibility arose down the road.
You know how certain guys, their names just sound like they belong on a certain team?
Yeah.
Jalen Beeks sounds like an Oakland A, doesn't he?
He does. He really I think we could like... be on to something there. Let's shift gears here. I want to talk about that Jackie Bradley Jr. situation that I alluded to.
Great,
the glove, as we know. We don't have to talk about that. But man, this guy gets cold and he gets hot. And when he's cold, it is just awful. He gives you beyond nothing with the bat. He doesn't even get on base. It's so bad when he gets this way. And one of the things that Farrell has not been shy about doing lately is playing Chris Young out there and having a combination of Young, Benintendi in center field, and Mookie in right field. I actually really like this because I don't think you give up that much defensively. Like, certainly Benintendi is not Jackie Bradley Jr., but also that's still a plus defensive outfield in my estimation. And the bats are working when that alignment is out there. So what do you think about that? And do you think that's something that we could see a little bit more? And maybe Jackie isn't the everyday guy that we thought he was.
Yeah, I don't know. I actually am pretty high on Chris Young's bat. He hit incredibly well last year, and he, you know, a little bit of a slow start this year, but he's started to turn it on. So I like the idea of getting him into the lineup more. I think the best iteration of the Red Sox, though, is one with Jackie Bradley in the lineup most days.
Yeah.
And you know, if he's going to hit below 200 with a, you know, a 260 on base percentage and very little power, it's hard to write his name in the lineup all the time. But you know, it's still pretty early. I think you got to keep running him out there. You know, maybe limit him a little bit against tough lefties if he's having trouble against lefties. But I don't remember who the pitcher was that he faced today, but I mentioned earlier in today's game, Thursday, May 11th, the Red Sox left the bases loaded twice. And one of those, they had the bases loaded with one out, and Bradley was up.
Was that against Jimmy Nelson?
No, it was Knebel.
Oh, yeah, yep.
I don't know if I'm saying that right, but anyway, he threw, I think, six pitches to Bradley in the at-bat, and they were all at the top of or well above the strike zone. And he got to a point where he got Bradley to swing and miss at one pitch, and then the other threw three balls, that one of which was, you know, well over Bradley's head, that Bradley didn't swing at. He didn't swing at any of those balls. And so it was a 3-1 count, and he threw a pitch that was just below Bradley's shoulders, and Bradley swung and missed at it. These are all fastballs, all of them. And it was 3-2, and it was like, you know, you're looking at the little, you know, chart of where the pitches have crossed the strike zone in the bottom right corner of the screen, and you're just like, I know that he's going to go upstairs with the fastball. Guaranteed. The question is Bradley going to swing at it? If he swings at it, he's going to miss it. If he doesn't swing at it, he's walking. He swung at it, and he missed. And so it's three fastballs upstairs, swing, swing, swing. I mean, it seems like the book is out on him here. Now, you know, not everybody throws 97 like whatever that guy's name is. So that maybe that particular chapter in the book isn't open to everybody who Bradley faces. But that seemed like a pretty naked attempt, you know, to strike Bradley out. Or I'm not saying it exactly right, but it was
to punch him out on a high fastball. Like, he knew he was going to chase that, so he went to it. And it's like one of the more obvious things you could throw in that situation. And it just still didn't matter.
There was no deception. I mean, right. He could have yelled high fastball coming before every pitch, and the result of the at bat would have been exactly the same.
So let me tell you what's troubling about Jackie. Last year he had the best season of his career, and one of the ones that made us say, hey, you know, like, maybe this is a bat that can play for a long time and actually be a plus.
Yeah.
He had a month in June of 2016 where he batted .218. He had a month in August of 2016 where he batted .198. And then in September and October, he batted .237. He did have the incredibly hot May where he batted .381. And then he had July where he batted .298. But he is prone to getting cold for stretches at a time. And if we go back to 2015, there are months where he was .354 in August, and then in September and October, over 31 games, so a slightly larger sample size than the 24 games in August, he hit .216. So it seems like this is the guy that he is. You know, he's going to give you nothing for tremendous stretches, and maybe the right thing to do is what Farrell is doing, is when he gets in these stretches, instead of letting him go out and, you know, screw up that lineup spot for the team for, I don't know, 3 weeks at a time, spell him and let him play twice a week during these slumps.
And, well, the question is, Jake, what is the – and I don't know the answer to this, and I maybe you do, but what is the best way to get him from those cold streaks into a hot streak? Because we've seen – I mean, last year he was basically a five-win player with defense and offense, which, you know, is incredibly valuable. He was a reason that, you know, the Red Sox had a successful regular season. I don't know how you make that transition. Like, you know, does he get there by playing? Does he get there by working off the field? You know, does he get in his own head? I don't know what the answer is, but, you know, the Red Sox need to figure that out, because you're right. If running him out there isn't moving him towards one of those hot streaks, then yeah, they're not helping themselves for sure. Right.
And I don't think that there's any evidence that it has in the past. And maybe what the solution is here, and I'm just spitballing, is instead of letting these things prolong and just go and go and go until, you know, one day they stop, if you catch them a little bit earlier and sit him down and be like, hey, you know, here's where your approach is going wrong right now, and he has three out of the five games or three out of the six games, whatever it is, to actually sit back, watch film, and look at other people's approaches and take a mental break from it, maybe that will snap him out of these things. So maybe instead of having these stretches where it's a month long, maybe you have a week or two every couple of months that you have to, you know, play without Jackie for most of the time in order to kind of mentally reset him. Because it's clear that what they've tried is not a great solution, right?
I don't know if I would say it's clear, because what they're trying now is what they tried last year, and they got a 5-win season out of him. So, and I would also say that he's not going to get hot from the bench. You're going to have to play him if you want to get production from him. So, you know, I mean, your point about minimizing his the damage he causes in from these cold streaks is well taken. I just don't know that sitting him down is doing that. Maybe it is. I feel like this is one of those questions we're not really going to be able to answer here. We kind of have to be on the inside.
Yeah.
You know, to see, you know, what's in his head, what, you know, the minutia of his mechanics, you know, that kind of stuff. I mean, that's, you know, the Red Sox coaching staff should be all over that. That's, you know, that's their job. And we're not close enough to him that we can, I think, really make an accurate assessment on that.
So you're saying we need to get Chili on the show.
Man, I'd be all for it. But I tend to err kind of on the opposite side from you. I tend to think that the way that guys get out of cold streaks is by playing. Now, obviously, if he's injured, you know, that calculus is different. If he's in his own head, I mean, certainly guys can benefit from sitting down. I'm not saying they can't, but I tend to think that, you know, cold streaks are you know, ended by playing, you know, by fighting through them. And you know, we've seen this before from Xander. We've seen it from Mookie, you know, guys that just stay in the lineup and you know, eventually they start hitting again.
I agree with you. I think that that's an old baseball adage that is mostly true. And I think it's true in basketball too. You know, shooters don't stop shooting when they're cold. They keep shooting because that's right. What they do. But I think that we have seen enough of Jackie Bradley do this for such long stretches of time that, unlike a Xander, unlike a Mookie Betts, he doesn't seem to have the ability to swiftly pull himself out.
I agree.
And that is the sole reason why I think that there's another solution possibly in there. And like you said, I don't know enough about it to say what that solution is, but certainly it'll be interesting to see how Farrell and Chili and the Red Sox adapt to this, because it's clear that they're taking a different tact with it than they had in the past, spelling him quite a bit earlier so far this season.
Yeah, well, I think you're exactly right. I think that the addition of Andrew Benintendi really changes the calculus, because Benintendi can play center field, whereas before they really didn't have somebody who was a true center fielder. I mean, Mookie could play there, but, you know, Mookie is at this point really a right fielder. And so I think adding Benintendi, who is really a center fielder, you know, and you know, moving Young to left, whereas before you were playing him in, you know, in right field with Betts in center. I think that lineup that with Benintendi in center is a much stronger one. It minimizes the defensive damage from having Bradley out of the lineup. And so it, you know, that in a way changes the calculus for the Red Sox and allows them to sit Bradley more when he's in these, you know, these cold spells. Now, whether ultimately that is better for Bradley or not, again, I just don't know the answer to that.
Yeah, and it's a damn good defensive lineup even with him out of there, which is the thing that makes that sort of a luxury that the Red Sox have.
Yeah, it's fine. It's good. I think they're a lot better with Bradley in, but you know, the value of a good defensive left fielder in Boston just isn't really that much that I think it makes a giant difference. So But I you know, I really like Bradley's defense in center field. I think that, you know, he's definitely a top five defensive center fielder in baseball. And so that's, you know, I think that's a significant loss, especially considering, you know, the makeup, the ground ball, fly ball makeup of the Red Sox staff. I mean, they have a lot of fly ball pitchers. You know, we were talking before, you know, in the previous years, we were talking about the Red Sox, you know, having a ground ball heavy rotation, and they really kind of moved away from that. Pomerantz is a fly ball guy. Rodriguez is a fly ball guy. Sale is a fly ball guy. And considering, you know, their infield defense, which is pretty iffy, especially, you know, at third base.
Especially on that left side, yeah.
Yeah, the left side is pretty rough. I mean, I love Pedroia. He's getting a little older. You know, Moreland has looked fine at first base. He's obviously a major league caliber first baseman. I haven't seen anything fantastic from him over there at all, and he's made a couple errors. So, you know, playing into that, you know, the more balls hit into the outfield versus the infield, as long as they're catchable, I'm all for that.
Yeah, it certainly makes
it's on having, you know, this amazing defensive outfielder or outfield setup where you've got three guys who are, you know, plus defensive center fielder or plus defensive outfielders, which I'm not sure Chris Young really is. Even after saying left field defense in Fenway is not that valuable, it still is valuable at some level.
Yeah, I agree. Especially with, you know, with Jackie out there, it gives you an added degree of excellence that you don't have with the other guys. And, you know, we've seen all the Statcast catches that he makes. It's, you know, the catch probabilities are crazy sometimes on plays that he makes look rather easy.
He's really, really good. So, I mean, I think that, you know, that puts a finer point on, you know, on the Red Sox coaching staff, you know, Chili Davis and Farrell, you know, diagnosing these cold streaks more quickly and getting, I mean, he doesn't have to be a 400, 600, 900 guy, but, you know, just getting some league average offense out of him occasionally would be really nice. So.
Yeah, definitely. It'll be interesting to see how that situation shakes out, but, you know, we'll have a better idea of what their plan is going forward in the next few weeks. We are running a little bit long, so we're going to start wrapping things up here. For all of you guys out there, you can subscribe to us on iTunes and on Stitcher. You can rate and review us there as well. You can find Matt on Twitter at MattyMatty2000. You can find myself on Twitter at DevJake, and we will aim to be with you earlier in the week, next week at our typical time. But, Matt, it was great getting to come on here and talk about some real positives about the Red Sox. I feel like we have a tendency to dissect the negative when we're on this show, but today we talked about a lot of really cool stuff, and, you know, I think we're going to see a lot of good baseball this year.
Yeah, I think it's shaping up to be a fun season. Maybe not exactly as the fun season we expected, but a fun and competitive season, and those are not to be taken lightly. So yeah, good times, Jake. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, you're welcome. All right, guys, enjoy the ride, and Red Sox will be on soon. So we'll see you then.